In their never-ending search for the miracle weapon, CIA operatives searched here in the remote mountain areas of southern Mexico for what up to then had been considered a myth, magic mushrooms.
The clip you're listening to is from a 1979 news report, and it's one of the chapters in the fairy tale version of the CIA's involvement with psychedelics. And as strange as that opening 10 seconds was, it gets even stranger.
They use this man, a part-time chemist with the CIA, to dupe this man, a vice president of a bank and an amateur mycologist or mushroom expert, to try to get to the magic mushrooms and turn them into a drug. But it would be the amateur, R. Gordon Wasson and his colleagues, who would win the race and develop the drug psilocybin from the magic mushrooms.
Now, the notion that a Wall Street banker like Gordon Wasson, who is deeply connected at the highest level to the United States government, to the director of the CIA, to the Council on Foreign Relations, which is like the most influential group in Washington, the idea that he was somehow the central figure in the discovery of magic mushrooms in the hills of rural Mexico is just, again, it's the stuff of fairy tales. But if we're to pull apart and truly understand what psychedelics are and how they've been used in our culture and how we might use them going forward, well, this story might have a lot of significance to those questions. And that is at least certainly the opinion of today's guest on Skeptico, Joe Atwell.
They do not have any concern whatsoever for the human value of their subjects. These are lab rats. They knew perfectly well that the drug produced psychosis, and they knew perfectly well that a fraction of the people weren't going to come back. But they went forward with the experimentations regardless. This was all used against us once. The sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture was artificial. It was used against us. It really debased and damaged our culture. And so now, as we, you know, sit here, we have, this new era, new drugs, new research, new government involvement. We just aren't in a position, until we know what is controlling the government, to trust these things.
Stick around. All that and a lot more coming up on Skeptico. Today we welcome Joseph Atwell back to Skeptico. He's here today to talk about some of his recent research and writings into the topic of psychedelics and entheogens, how those have been introduced and promoted in our culture, and what the implications of those might be for our culture going forward. Of course, we talked about this subject a little bit a couple of episodes back, and I've been very interested in bringing Joe's voice and perspective to this discussion, as I think he has a very, very interesting and unique angle to bring to this topic. Joe Atwell is, of course, the author of Caesar's Messiah, a book that single-handedly forever changed the landscape of biblical studies and our understanding of the Roman influence on Christianity. He's one of my favorite guests. Joe, welcome back to Skeptico. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me, Alex, and what a kind introduction.
It's all true. You know, I look around and I say, who are people you can point to who, on their own, without any institutional support, without any university support or government support, just kind of on their own, organically kind of shaped things in a different way? And I think that's just amazing about what you did with Caesar's Messiah. So I am in awe of that. But I say that because anyone listening knows that I respect your work, but it doesn't mean that I always agree with all your conclusions. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with that either. In fact, you know, maybe this is a little side issue that we can kind of talk about at the beginning, because I think this ability to listen to someone else, to genuinely learn from someone else, and at the same time have, some fundamental disagreements with that person, is something that's not only missing in our polarized culture, because we can see that it's missing. But in a very kind of Joe Atwell way, I think we can also see that it's been intentionally engineered out of the culture. And I was wondering if you have any thoughts on that to kind of start us off.
Well, I would say that discourse, political discourse, has been engineered over time by the basically secret society, the oligarchs that control our culture and our media, and the kind of talking heads that you get in mainstream media are basically intellectual weapons. They're just there to kind of prevent people from thinking clearly. And so what happens whenever anyone brings up real issues like 911 is basically the, you know, mainstream media just shouts them down, uses intimidating language. And over time, the population has just become used to it. And
weary. And they become weary, or they become polarized, which is what we've seen. I mean, they were weary before. And now what we see is this kind of polarization added to the weariness. It's kind of a double whammy.
Sure. And so the point is that real discourse is very difficult to engage in inside the media, because of how it's been structured. And this has really affected people's expectations about intellectual discourse. And so it occurs at a very, very low level. And this would be basically a great thing to improve, because this would help, culture and democracy.
Okay. So with that, let's jump into kind of today's subject. We've gone a couple of rounds on this already, and you've been very patient with me. I was originally putting together this show on psychedelics and entheogens, and I contacted you, and we actually did a whole interview and a lot of exchanges back and forth. But I'm hoping we can capture what you're really all about on this, because you have some really interesting ideas, and I first ran across it while I was putting together that show. So I want to, as well as succinctly but thoroughly, all of the contradiction, talk about your idea, your understanding about how the CIA and others have had their hand in shaping this cultural revolution of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, in particular the drugs and the psychedelics and this debasing of culture that you see in that. So wherever you want to start, let's just take us through the whole picture there in terms of what you've discovered.
Well, it's a long historical process. You can go all the way back to Karl Marx, his idea about destroying European culture. He was talking about unbridled sexuality, with the idea of basically the family was something that they wanted to break apart. You can go forward then into the Frankfurt School, which was basically an iteration of Marx's ideas. And you can then, just come, straight forward from the Frankfurt School into the Macy Conference. Basically, many of the same individuals are moving back and forth, but they're all having the same ideas. And then you have MKUltra, which was, a CIA project. I wanted to mention that the CIA, is not the problem. The problem is that there is some organization that basically controls government. And what we see as agencies, and think of them as the problem, as though MKUltra was a problem within the CIA or the CIA is a problem within the government. This is just not the correct way to understand it. The problem is, hold on.
That is such an important point. And I really want to draw that out and talk about that, because that point in and of itself requires a full hashing out. And even before I get there, though, you have a lot of really interesting points here. I want to step back to the first thing you said, because I asked this broad question. You took us all the way back to Karl Marx. And I think some people are probably going, well, wait a minute, what is he even talking about? So break down that first point of, why would you want to destroy the family? Why would you want to debase culture? Why, from a kind of Machiavellian, somebody has to rule the world, it might as well be me, perspective, why would they want to do that?
I would say it's because the groups have hatred toward European culture.
Well, let me throw out another reason where I'm fishing for an answer here. So let me throw it out and then you can respond to it. It's that, yeah, maybe that. But the other thing is, hey, man, it's about control and shit. So you can do your thing the way you want it to be done. You don't want people thinking freely. You don't want people doing their own thing. Even you will sacrifice progress for control. The first and foremost thing you want is control. So any way you can kind of leave people scrambling or unsure of these kind of things or just in a state of upset, it really is good if you're into control. What do you think about that in addition to what you're saying?
That's well said and quite correct. I mean, the idea is basically atomized individuals. Individuals without social and ethnic connections are far easier to control. They are incapable of rebellion. If you look at, you know, what has been destroyed by the secret society in, say, the United States from the end of World War II to today, I mean, you start out with the ethnic communities, particularly ethnic Catholic communities. These were targeted and basically, you know, pushed out into the suburbia where they just became the vast white middle class. And then from there, you began with sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and culture started to atomize even further. They basically promoted a kind of feminism. Gloria Steinem was a CIA agent promoting a kind of feminism that would even atomize the family a step further. The single mom with the welfare check became something that was seen as or given to the population as positive. And then integration was also promoted. Again, it's just the idea of the more atomized that an individual is, the easier it is for the oligarchs to control.
So atomized and homogenized at the same time to just make you feel isolated and alone. And like you said, how are you going to rebel when you feel you're an island, when you feel you don't have any strong group to bond to and say, okay, let's go attack the castle?
Exactly. I couldn't say it any better. I mean, that's exactly what they had in mind, and that's exactly what they did. You can see in their creation of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture, a kind of a desire to use Eros, the pleasure principle, so-called, to lure people away from the cultural connections that could create an organization that could basically contest the power of the oligarchs. So basically, we have been the victim of weaponized anthropology, weaponized psychology. If you look at the groups that really, have the focus of evil, I mean, inside them, we see, just so many psychologists. An interesting thing for people to do is there's a video called Conversation About LSD. And, it's on YouTube. And these are individuals that were involved in the MKUltra project. And you can see the number of psychologists, anthropologists, psychiatrists. I mean, it's just it's a collection of intellectual technique that's all been brought together for evil.
Let me stop you there, Joe, because you've done some really important digging on MKUltra. And more importantly, as you so often do, you've taken some of the pieces that were always lying out there for everyone to see and kind of put them together in a new and interesting, important way. And I want to get to that. I just want to hold off 1 minute because, as I promised, I want to return to a point that you made. And ever since you've said it, it is kind of continued to ring in my ears, so I want to draw it out. And this is the point about the fact that the CIA is not the CIA, as we understand it in common culture, is an important point that is never drawn out. But as you give some examples, it's really self-evident when you look at some of these things and you say, well, gee, that that really isn't a governmental agency. That it really isn't a group that is in there under any oversight or control. And even their mission seems to be somewhat bigger. There's something above that that I'm not aware of, and yet I'm being told over and over again, oh, that's the CIA, that's the CIA. Walk us through how we know there's something above the CIA.
Well, I mean, first of all, if you just look at the heads of the CIA, you know, as the organization, you know, came to our culture, I mean, Donovan, Dulles, Helms, these are all investment bankers, lawyers. And the idea that these would be the head of a international intelligence gathering organization just on its face is preposterous. I mean, you would think that this is more an organization created by banking families. If you look at the precursor of the CIA, you have the OSS, and then look in the you know, organizational charts of OSS in Europe, it's all the Mellon family, the Mellon banking family. And so you have right on its face, you have some bizarre connection into banking families and something which is supposed to be military intelligence. And then you come forward a few years and you have the MKUltra employment of someone named Gordon Wasson. And Wasson is the person who really begins the psychedelic movement in the United States. And what is his background? Well, he is a partner in J.P. Morgan. And so this really isn't, you know, something that could possibly be circumstantial. It's you know, just be statistically crazy. And then, of course, when you look at, if you go out just a few individuals, you'll see that the Mellon family returns. You know, Billy Hitchcock Mellon is in the Millbrook Mansion is where Tim Leary is living. And then they're funding the Grateful Dead. And so you can see that basically the banking families have had this tremendous impact on what's supposed to be military intelligence, supposed to be something that is in, under the control of democracy. And then if you just, you know, again, just take a step back, you can see secret societies. You see individuals are members of the Bohemian Grove, Freemasonry, and other secret societies or military intelligence. I mean, one thing that really basically got me kind of moving down this path was when I started looking at MKUltra and saw it was, you know, headquartered in Palo Alto, and I saw the relationship between it and then the counterculture. I noticed that there had been a car accident right outside the Palo Alto hospital that basically the MKUltra employment was going on for Robert Hunter, member of the Grateful Dead, and Ken Kesey, you know, the individual who created the acid test. And in the car accident, a police report was created, and you have Robert Hunter and Jerry Garcia. Now, this makes sense because, you know, they, in my opinion, are fully inside the deal, and they're helping to bring about the sex, drugs, and rock and roll counterculture. But the other individual in the car is so significant. It was Eric Trist. And Eric is the son of Alan Trist, the founder of the Tavistock Institute. And the Tavistock was basically just the British half of sort of the MKUltra, you know, kind of operation. I mean, individuals pass back and forth between the organizations. And of course, there's just no reason at all that such an individual would be with, you know, this group as they're leaving, you know, the hospital where these this MKUltra, you know, LSD training is going on. And so it just gives you a very clear picture that, you know, what we think are democratically controlled institutions basically have hidden agendas. And that the science that they're developing, which we think is supposed to be either defending us against spycraft from the Russians or whatever, is actually technology that they're developing to enslave the population, to create a kind of mental domination by controlling our history, by controlling our culture. Unfortunately, I'm afraid it ends up with a massive reduction in population. This doesn't, you know, lead to a Pacific slave state. I mean, they basically exterminate the people they want off the planet, and then they have won.
you know, that's interesting. The last part of it is pretty controversial. I don't know how much of that last part I buy into. But again, in typical kind of Joe Hatwell fashion, there's a couple of points in there that are just incredibly insightful in an important way. And I want to connect it to a Skeptico interview that I did. People might remember a few months ago, I interviewed this guy, Dr. Ed May, who was the head of research at the Stanford Research Institute Stargate program, which, if anyone has really investigated this, again, to your point, you know, Stargate is off doing remote viewing and psychic spying. The mission really was to counter a Russian initiative at psychic use and psychic spying and to psychically influence leaders in the United States. This has been discovered and disclosed after the fall of the Soviet Union. We have exposure to some of those documents. But, and here's how all this stuff gets really, really complicated and has to be fully examined in the way that you were doing it. So that sounds like CIA work, and it was. I mean, the Stargate project was military intelligence funded. It was also a part of MK Ultra. That's really important what you're saying there, Joe. It's a part of this larger mission involving mind control and control of the population that we don't like to talk about. Here's what I think was significant about my interview with Ed May. He comes across as a good soldier. He has a very limited worldview that doesn't allow him to even understand fully the research that he was doing, let alone the larger way that that fits into the equation. But then again, isn't that the kind of guy you want in that position? But the point I wanted to kind of draw out, because I think it amplifies in a way but further complicates your point, is he talks about some very real stories from his worldview about going to Congress, meeting with congressmen, trying to get funding for Stargate, the battle for ongoing support among people who had to respond to constituents who said, I think what you're doing is satanic, it goes against my religious views and all the rest of that. And what I took out of that is that you can understand why there's a meta CIA, why there's a control level above that. Because on another, and I'm not saying I buy into this totally, but from a very practical sense, somebody has to rule the world. You know, you can't, here's a real threat that we have to respond to. And you can't go to Congress and say, this is a real threat in terms of psychic spying. We need to do something. You just can't get that stuff funded. So even though I think Ed May fits the useful idiot role to a certain extent, there's also a realness to what it takes to run a superpower and to run an intelligence organization that is complicated. Tell me what you think about all that.
I think that's a logical principle that if you, you know, carry it to an extreme, creates basically a situation where the oligarchs can justify anything.
It creates a situation that we find ourselves in, doesn't it?
Which is exactly right. And so, you know, I would just say that I don't buy the guy's story. I doubt it very much. I don't think he would be that stupid.
To listen to the interview.
Yeah, I haven't heard it, but I'll just say on its face, I don't like it, because the SRI was fully exposed as doing, brain experiments, which are against the law, which would damage the individuals. They were doing extremely low frequency electromagnetic wave study into, you know, people that weren't even apprised that this kind of experimentation was going to take place. When this was found out, and this was one of the things that actually led up to the Church Commission, when this was found out, some guy in the Navy, I forget his name, but he demanded that the thing stop. I think his name was Kozlov. He was some, you know, muckamuck in the Navy. I think he was like the Secretary of the Navy. And he said, what the hell's going on? You got to stop this thing. the SRI blew them off. They didn't bother to stop. And then they were able to get money funded through another source in the Navy. The Navy itself was going against the secretary and funded the SRI for another $100,000 so they could continue with something that basically every one of the individuals involved with should be brought in front of a trial, kind of a Nuremberg type trial, and incarcerated. So this is, and bear in mind that what they're trying to do with this kind of a low frequency wave study is they're trying to learn how to control people like robots. This is what they're trying to do, Alex. So I'm sorry, I just, you know, this guy may just be an absolute kind of myopic individual who can't see what's going on. But, you know, I'm just going to err on the side of caution. And I'm just going to say, look, you have to assume that they're all dirty. And you have to assume that every single experiment that these guys are doing is either overtly dirty, it's just done for the purpose of enslaving the population, or it's something that in general could be used in some way for this project. So, you know, unless proven otherwise, I think we're really wise to err on the side of caution. And I'm just going to remind you something, Alex, just because I know that, you know, this is something that creates a kind of a clear line of for analysis, and that is 911. Now, if you believe that, you know, the buildings can fall straight down at free fall speed and you know, that the guy was able to fly the plane and hit the Pentagon with no debris, okay, God bless you. Just go your way. Those of us who see these events as self-evident, right, that this was simply an operation by the government, then we have to understand that we are living in the world that has been created by the MKUltra science and technology, right? MKUltra didn't disappear. When the Church Commission asked to have all of the documents, Helms said, you know what, I destroyed them. And they said, why? And he goes, I didn't want to embarrass my friends, right? So this, and then he continued on as head of the CIA. So you can see that democracy is just a facade, that the overall project of mind control has continued unabated, and we are now suffering as, you know, as a nation underneath its boot heel. So when you know, we talk about, well, could there be some justification based on, you know, a technological arms race with Russia? It's irrelevant to me, Alex. I don't care. Sure, who cares? What is important is that the organization has never been brought to sunlight. And it's when people ask me about, well, what about the, you know, the spiritual potentiality of psychedelic drugs? I just say, look, that isn't on the table. What is on the table is that there is an organization that has been using these things against us. And until that has been brought completely to sunlight, then all of these attributes that have come out of their manipulation of culture have to be stopped. I mean, we just have to stop right now, freeze in our tracks, and we have to do the investigation of what is inside the government, and then we can make decisions about, well, is this a good cultural idea, or is there something to worry about from Russia or the Chinese? But right now, the problem is inside the government. It's what controls it. That's what we've got to focus on. We can get to all these other issues later. I'm not opposed to any of, you know, these ideas. I'm just saying that it's not really something that we need to deal with immediately. What we got to do right now is we've got to focus on what's controlling our government.
You know, there's so many amazing points there. I want to tell people that we're recording this on 9/12, the day after 9/11, yeah, which is interesting. I think what you just said about 9/11 is so beautifully put. I wish I could just pull that out and play that for people over and over again, because it does get hard to talk about 9/11. And I've mentioned my wife a couple times on this show, which she always kind of has to take this, the role that she plays, which is, you know, NPR listening, averse to any kind of conspiracy. And, you know, she said yesterday, gee, you know, I mean, I really feel for the whole 9/11 thing and all the people that died, but my God, aren't we over that? And I was like, you know, if you understand 9/11 as a guy in a cave who flew a couple of planes into some buildings, yeah, we really should be over it. But if you understand it for what it really is, what it, as you said, plainly is, then we should never be over it, because we can never even take, as you beautifully said, we cannot go forward until we resolve that. So, you know, we're going to go on in this dialogue and we're going to leave 9/11 behind, because that's not what we're here to talk about. But I think you are spot on to bring that up and bring that center stage, because we can bounce around and talk about a million other things when we're not putting first things first, which is, you know, hey, 9/11 was an inside job, okay? So from there, we can go forward and we can talk about anything else, but that was an inside job. Let's be clear about that. Okay, so let's get back to talking about psychedelics, because you made, again, your case very, very well, I have to say. But I want to step back in history and I want you to build that case a little bit. The last time we talked, this isn't in the interview, but maybe I'll include some clips in for people. We talked about Gordon Wasson. We talked about Andrei Petraich, people that you, as a literary analyst, like to bring to the stage and show their role. Let's talk about Gordon Wasson. Who was he? What role does he play? Why do we think this is an actor rather than a real individual?
Wasson was the guy who brought psychedelic drugs to American culture. There was an article, May 1957, that described his journey into the Mexican desert.
In Life magazine, which people won't remember, but I mean, this is like, you know, this is it. You're in Life magazine, that's it, right?
Yeah, it was the most powerful and most widely read magazine in the United States. It was owned by Henry Luce, Skull and Bones, secret society guy, and Wasson he was a partner in J.P. Morgan. He was very, very high up inside the secret society. He was actually a chairman of the meetings of the Council of Foreign Relations. And this is just critically important, because...
Say that again so people don't lose sight of that. Because the way he's portrayed, and I will at this point probably interject or splice in that clip where he's on a TV show being portrayed as just this adventure Indiana Jones independent guy down there in the jungles looking at psychedelics, and then Council on Foreign Relations?
Yeah. Right. Doesn't make much sense, does it? Well, particularly that he would be the chairman. These were documents that were unearthed by Jan Ervin. And they are, you know, just transparent because they basically CFR documents, and they list the individuals in the room during the meeting. And they also list basically the chairman of the organization, Gordon Wasson. So, you know, if you know the background of the CFR, you know that it is basically the union between the banks, the military intelligence, and, you know, political power. It's a secret society.
To this day, presidents and presidents that want to be reference the Council on Foreign Relations in hushed tones. I mean, you can go listen to Hillary Clinton and she says, oh, you know, the CFR, I get my daily marching orders. And they've been so outed that I think the power has shifted to some other secret groups. But man, anyone who has any doubts, I mean, the CFR was it in terms of where you went for power.
Sure. And it's good to kind of note the sort of the secret organizations that are in back of the whole process. So you've got Skull and Bones owning Life magazine, the chairman of the Council of Foreign Relations going down to Mexico, and then saying, you know, he had this spiritual and very positive experience, which then basically becomes the foundation story of psychedelic drugs, that they are basically from a vast and deep religious tradition, that they will help person on their spiritual development. And, you know, the story that Wasson told was untrue. I mean, the events were shaded in such a way to create the impression that this was an ancient God-seeking organization. And Wasson then went on with Carl Rusk and named this, you know, category of psychedelic drugs, enfugens, you know, the God within. And, you know, in fact, this was all nonsense. The, you know, the ancient codicils and the letters from the missionary all talked about the use of mushrooms as something that, you know, would be akin to LSD use by the deadheads. I mean, it was not something that was a spiritual development. It was more recreational or narcotic. You know, people talk about ayahuasca and like, well, you know, how could it possibly be the case that these two plants were joined together? And that's, you know, just because people don't know that in that culture that emetics are very common, that because of the parasites in the, you know, the Amazon basin, that people need to vomit. And so there had been, you know, a tradition of emetics going back a long way. And at one point, someone figured out that if you combine these two plants, you could really get sick. And this was the basis of ayahuasca. It was through the emetic tradition. It wasn't a long-standing spiritual path. And then, of course, that was brought, you know, just like the magic mushrooms is brought by Gordon Wasson and MK Ultra, because Wasson's trip was then discovered. Documents were then discovered. Dr. Colin Ross, psychiatrist who was dealing with victims of MK Ultra in Canada, he got his hands on documents and found that Wasson basically was being paid for. All of these trips were being paid for right out of MK Ultra. So Wasson was, this whole trip was an MK Ultra project, and this, you know, is very similar to how the ayahuasca comes into our culture, because that comes from William Burroughs. Burroughs is someone who has a background in military intelligence. He had private meetings with William Donovan, who became the first head of the CIA, before he goes down to Mexico. While he's there, he kills his wife and then goes into the jungle with John Markey. Markey is an OSS guy, and they are looking for the ayahuasca. This is, and when you stand back and look at the big picture, you can see this is just, they're just trying to create this kind of tradition that doesn't really exist of a deep spiritual history for these plants. And this is all going to be given to basically the deadhead as justification for the cultural development that they're interested in bringing about. I always mention that people do this little experiment because it's very simple and you can see what we're up against. If there's anything in our culture that shows you exactly what we're up against, it's the May 1957 Life magazine cover, right? So you'll look at the cover and you'll see there's a black box which is inset into the cover. And there's words on it. And one of them is basically describing spiritual visions from mushrooms in the Mexican desert. But two articles which are distinct from Wasson's are also referenced inside the black box. And the one on top simply says great adventures. But the final words are purportedly describing another article, but are the words teenage allowances, right? Now, I assert that once you understand that neuro-linguistic programming or coding the unconscious, you know, you mentioned, how they were like looking at how to get at the unconscious with these different techniques. Once you understand that Wasson is representing MKUltra, then you look at the box and you go, oh, I get it. Great adventures, teenage allowances, you see. This is what they're trying to do. This is all going to end up in Woodstock in about 12 years. So they're using neuro-linguistic programming. Basically, they have determined how to, you know, what they think are ways to basically influence us through the subconscious. And they are just transparently using it in this Life magazine cover. And so, you know, this is, you know, this is a place where I think the citizens should just stop, spend a little time in reflection, try to, you know, there maybe go through the process of kind of looking a little bit at neurolinguistic programming, looking at what the MKUltra science was in development, and then just honestly ask yourself, well, is there any possibility this is circumstance? Because I just don't think so, Alex. I'm afraid not. And so this is what we're up against, is that they are very sophisticated. They have an absolute disregard for the humanity of the what could be called their subjects, right? When you look at 911, you look at the number of deaths that occurred, you know, the people that pulled that off basically felt they had the moral authority just to kill thousands of people in what can be described as a religious ritual, right? I mean, there was really no, they could have done this in many other ways without having so many fatalities, but they did it this way, which means that they don't give a damn about the life, the value of existence of the people that they see as their subjects. So when you look at the May 1957 cover, you're looking at the same moral view of humanity. You're inside the guild, or you are basically an animal. And so this is the point that the citizen has to start to organize themselves to defend themselves against this group. I mean, we want to have a future. We want to have a world where our children can flourish. We have got to clean up the mess in government. You know, the people control it. We've got to expose it. We have to, basically make democracy work to benefit us. And recognize how they have controlled it, you know, and control the candidates so that we have no choices, so that our history is falsified, you know, so that, when 911, these things occur, the media just creates a fictional story that's used for mind control.
Well, let me jump in there because no, that's all right. You made some really good points, and I think you made your case in a very strong way that, you know, people are going to find a lot of things that maybe they don't go along with, but I'd encourage anyone to really, at the same time, dig into all the details and then step back and say, is he maybe right? Do we have to look at things in that way? But I want to kind of counter some of the things that you're saying from where I'm coming from that I think I'd like to love to explore with you and hear your response to. First, I understand the assume they're all dirty ethos. You know, I mean, I get that in the way that you said it in terms of if we're really going to get to the bottom of it, we can't keep giving people the benefit of the doubt. You know, maybe a plane really did fly into 9/11. No, you have to analyze the evidence the best you can and then bravely come to the conclusions that you're going to come to, no matter how unpleasant they might be. At the same time, I don't think assume they're all dirty really works either. And it can lead us to kind of our own, just reinforcing our own beliefs in a way. So let me kind of present my thesis. And I'll do that by first talking about Terrence and Dennis McKenna, who I'm sure you're aware of, and they're well-documented psychonauts, people who explored psychedelics. But, I mean, go look at their history, Joe. These are two kids. I mean, they're practically teenagers. I think Terrence is 23 and Dennis is 19 when they're in India, which has a long, long, many hundreds or thousands of year history in using psychedelic and mind-altering plants and substances. So they're there looking for the truth and they can't find it, or they become disillusioned with what they see. So they say, okay, we're going to go totally third world. We're going to go to Colombia, and they start traipsing through the hills of Colombia. And you can go read their accounts and read their story. And you can also look at their lives and how they lived their lives afterwards. And, you know, again, here is where I think assuming they're all dirty doesn't work if we have some solid evidence that suggests that these guys were, their message was being controlled and manipulated, then bring it. But the way that I read it sounds pretty straight up to me that they're walking through the hills and they do run across Shaman, who we do know exist, and they say, yeah, there are the mushrooms you can eat, and here are some of the other plants that you can do, and here are the effects, and they'll connect us with this alternative consciousness that I think we're going to talk about in a minute. So let me just stop there and say, what do you make of Terrence and Dennis McKenna?
In my opinion, they're just total liars and are basically just operatives for the organization. I could be wrong. I mean, how could I actually prove it? There is an audio.
Well, hold on, because you can prove it. I mean, I think the kind of proof that you brought to Gordon Wasson is incredibly compelling to most of us. It is to me. But, you know, the last time we spoke, I told you about, I brought up Ram Dass, you know, former Harvard University and colleague of Timothy Leary, who, when you look into his background, you know, you could kind of draw these conclusions that it looks sketchy. So that's why I didn't bring him up again. If you really look at his life and his associates and the people around him and what they say, hundreds and hundreds of people, I don't think he's at all sketchy. I think we can only take his account for what it is. Again, I don't think we can assume he's dirty, but I left him out of the discussion this time because Terrence and Dennis McKenna, I've looked. I just don't see the usual kind of funny business connections with the power structure.
Well, the case, you know, is circumstantial, it's quite often by, you know, basically by association. I mean, we're dealing with a secret society, right? We're dealing with, people who are trained to be basically lifetime actors. And so you're rarely going to come across, you know, fingerprints, you know, like Gloria Steinem's outing as a CIA agent or Gordon Wasson's pay requisition for MKUltra. You know, they're good at hiding it. But you have a circumstantial case that I think becomes, you know, what should be the operative reality. And with Terrence McKenna, he talks so much about the mushroom. I believe it is talking. This information that he's getting, you know, from the plant. I mean, this is rubbish, and is basically is the same approach that Gordon Wasson used.
But hold on, Joe, because now we're really getting at the root cause of this and the way that I think it connects with what I've investigated and with Skeptico for the last 10 years. And that here's my working hypothesis, that I accept so much of what you're saying as being true, and the debasing of culture, the weaponizing of anthropology, which I love that phrase that you've turned there. I think it's perfectly stated. And the weaponization of the mind and psychedelics as a part of that. But here's where I read the history different. I think they made a fundamental mistake in what they thought psychedelics would do and how they would be used, because they had a fundamental misunderstanding about the nature of consciousness. And as I've explored on this show, that fundamental misunderstanding continues to be the dominant paradigm in science, but it is just not true. So they were operating under this paradigm, mind equals brain, that we can change the brain and that will somehow, since the brain generates all consciousness, that will change the conscious experience. And what they didn't plan on and what they didn't understand, what they didn't see, is that consciousness is somehow, in some way we don't understand, fundamental. It's beyond the brain. The brain is, to put it in simple terms, acting like a filter or a valve in how consciousness is perceived and operated with, by the human being, but we are not consciousness. And I think there's a deeper struggle, if you want to call it, you know, this elite class, this controlling class, the oligarchs, and, you know, who knows how that whole thing is divided. But I think there's a fundamental divide even among those groups in terms of this issue of consciousness and whether we really are these biological robots that can be manipulated, or whether, as we know from a lot of these secret societies, their understanding is that there is some higher order to consciousness and there is some effect in the spiritual world that they're trying to marshal and control. But before I get too far afield, I want to bring it back to, and I got tons of evidence, scientific evidence, as we talked about in you know, my recent episode with Cody Nacone, and I talked about Rick Strassman, and I can give you just tons of other examples, David Nutt in the UK, all these experiments that have been done with psychedelics that all seem to point in the same direction. It's not about the brain primarily. It's pointing to a greater consciousness that is somehow fundamental. And I don't think these culture shapers knew that or saw that until they ran square into it with the psychedelic movement. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if it's not about the brain, then they don't need the drugs. So,
it's not that they need the drugs, but that there is a larger consciousness, and that when you affect the drugs, you can affect the way that we interact with that larger consciousness. But it's not to misunderstand the relationship between the brain and consciousness. It's like the 50 shows I've done on near-death experience. The reason I did them is because there's kind of the final straw. I mean, consciousness extends beyond bodily death. We know that. Science and the science control mechanism fights that tooth and nail because they like the paradigm that we're under right now, which is all this very controlled biological robot kind of thing. But that's just not the nature of reality. Consciousness extends beyond bodily death. That's just the way it is. I don't know what it means, but that's the way it is.
Well, as I said, if it isn't you know, about the brain, then the oligarchs wouldn't need the drugs. The oligarchs are, you know, the issues that you're, you know, bringing up are really just in a separate categorical compartment. It's just the oligarchs are interested in control. They use drugs basically to produce what they see as psychosis. So when someone takes drugs and, you know, basically sees something that is not in what the oligarchs see as the real world, the world that they want to control, then they've had, you know, success. And so, if you look at Wasson's paper, you know, the first, you know, the Life magazine article, he says that the drugs produce a kind of schizophrenia. And he says that this is very positive, right? That this is something people should want to have. Just after the acid test, the Esalen Institute, which McKenna is involved with, produced the seminars on psychosis, and they all promoted psychosis as kind of this artistic and valuable state. You had Allen Ginsberg, Alan Watts, the one of the guys, psychiatrists from Peru, I think. You know, they're all touting the values of psychosis. Well, if you just always analyze these things from the perspective of the oligarch, you can see, you know, that they're getting what they want. They could care less if the individuals in the psychotic or schizophrenic or drug-induced state, you know, have a spiritual communion with something. They don't care.
But hold on, because that's kind of the point in a way. You know, you can go all the way back and look at the experiments that we still can see, the LSD experiments that we can still see YouTubes on, and what a lot of these people that have these transformative spiritual experiences are saying is hey, I'll trump your I don't care with an even bigger I don't care. And by that, I mean, all I care about is that transformative spiritual experience, because that is the window to the larger reality that you don't get. So you can play your little control game down here, and you can kill millions of people, and you can abuse whoever you want to abuse, but you are close to a larger reality that I now have a glimpse of. So I'm kind of more at peace with the game that you're playing. And I'm not trying to convince you of that per se, but I'm just saying that is another way to read what's going on. And it's actually what they're saying. So the people in the LSD experiments that are, it's hilarious if one goes back and watches this, because there are these guys in these 1950s short sleeve white shirts and the thin ties, and they didn't know what they were doing. And they do this drug and they're suddenly like, man, everything I thought I knew, I don't know. It doesn't matter. And if we read the records, the experimenters are going, hey, wait a minute, this isn't exactly what we wanted or expected here, you know? So the CIA or these control mechanisms being what they are, and this is, again, my opinion, they are more reactive than proactive, right? No one is right 100% of the time. So what these guys do is just throw the crap out there and then say, oh, well, that didn't go the way we wanted. Well, how can we still use it? How can we, you know, debase culture with it or whatever? But I can see how they could go down that path without realizing what they had unleashed. And what they had unleashed is an access, a doorway to truly a greater consciousness field. And, you know, if I could bring it back to the interview you listened to that I gave you the clips from, Dr. Rick Strassman at University of New Mexico, who just a few years ago, relatively, you know, was given permission to use DMT and to experiment with DMT. I mean, again, we can assume that they're all dirty, but I find no reason to assume that they're all dirty from looking at this guy's research and talking to this guy. And yet his conclusion is that his subjects of his experiment were truly transported to a different field of consciousness beyond their brain that had different characteristics. And again, that's been widely reported. So I can see how both of these can be true, how there can be this larger consciousness, and there can also be these control-oriented, master of the universe oriented people who just kind of ignore all that and say, well, how can I use these tools to get my gains? So I don't think that's really where you're at, but I want to make clear that's kind of how I see the landscape.
Sure. I would just point out those videos. I mean, you're looking at Sidney Cohn and Nicholas Burkell. These are both MKUltra psychiatrists. If you analyze the questioning that they're doing of the subjects, basically these individuals should be tried for human experimentation.
Right.
These are like the sickest individuals that have ever crawled on the planet, because they know perfectly well that they've induced a kind of schizophrenia. And the questions they're trying to see, to what extent is the, you know, perception of reality being damaged by the drug? They're looking for how much psychosis they can produce. They're using human beings for experimentation, and there is no guarantee that these individuals are going to recover their sanity. Many people have taken that drug and have had complete psychotic breaks that they've never recovered from, and those individuals damn well knew it, Alex. So
I don't disagree with you.
Go back to those videos. You go back to those videos. To Burkell and Cohn, and just very carefully analyze the questioning that they're doing, and you'll see they do not have any concern whatsoever for the human value of their subjects. These are lab rats, and they're trying to determine that the degree of psychosis that has happened. Cohn is just, I mean, you're just dealing with evil, you know, on a scale that's just unimaginable. Most humans can't even imagine that humans can really be that sick. And that's one of the reasons why they can get away with it, is because people don't call them on it. But this is the case. They knew perfectly well that the drug produced psychosis, and they knew perfectly well that a fraction of the people weren't going to come back. But they went forward with the experimentations regardless. And then, you know, I'll tell you something. Those guys are also at the MKUltra reunion party. And then you can see that sick individual, Sidney Cohen, going, you know, people say that the CIA, you know, funded us and was in back of it. What do you think about that? He's asking the question because John Mark's book about the Manchurian Candidate has come out. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Cohen, but, you know, the MKUltra pay requisitions then got released and you were identified as being one of the people being funded through the program. So this question is just a distraction. He's trying to move people away from the idea that, well, you know, I might have been actually guilty against crimes against humanity. You talk about, OK, we've got to, like with Strassman, we shouldn't really be, you know, we should like give him the benefit of the doubt. Alex, I just strongly disagree. Until we get some clarity.
Hold on. I get your point there, but that's not real either. I mean, everything you're saying is true. So, you know, put together the other pieces that you're talking about with 9/11. I mean, come on. We've been at this for 17 years. Anyone who thinks we're going to get to the bottom of 9/11 or someone's going to come out and tell the truth, that guy that I haven't researched it enough to know if the guy is for real, but that YouTube that was making the rounds in the last couple months of a inside operative CIA guy who says, yeah, here's how we brought down Building 7. It was a controlled demolition. And it's a deathbed confession, which we know in a court of law carries a lot more weight than a regular confession. So I don't know if that's been debunked, folks. If it has, I apologize. I've been meaning to research that, but I haven't. But the like you pointed out, the Pentagon thing, you know, anyone who just goes and looks at the Pentagon, you know, it's like game over. But come on, we're never going to get to the bottom of that. So
why not?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Well, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about from a pragmatic practical standpoint. I'm saying we have to try and navigate all this stuff the best that we can. And I'm just uncomfortable with the assume that they're all dirty thing, because I think that can also lead us down a path where we're just create an echo chamber of confirming our own beliefs. So
Alex,
again, if you have something
until we find out what's inside the government, this is all, you know, angels dancing on the head of a pin. Who knows? I don't have a clue. I don't know if Strassman is dirty. How would I possibly know that? I don't know him. I've never studied his work. It could well be that he's not. But the point is, we cannot go forward at this particular time.
But we're all going forward all the time, Joe. We're all going forward all the time. We're all trying to figure out.
Alex, let's go forward to some clarity of what exactly the government's doing. Because here's my point. Look, this was all used against us once, right? It was all used against us. The sex, drugs, and rock and roll culture was artificial. It was used against us. It really debased and damaged our culture. And so now, as we, you know, sit here, we have, you know, this new era, new drugs, new research, new government involvement. We just aren't in a position, until we know what is controlling the government, to trust these things. They hurt us once. This time, let's put a little scrutiny and sunlight on these things. And, you know, it's like with Strassman or any of the people that are kind of advocating sort of the psychonauts, right, that are wanting this, you know, let's go into this area and try to do more research. Here's what I would say to them, Alex. You know what? If you are really ethical, then what you should do is not put the cart before the horse. The first step should be, we've got to really understand what the tradition of this psychedelic movement is. That's the first thing we got to do. We need informed consent. So before you start promoting all of the advantages, right, and spiritual development that these drugs can bring, you've got to give the public the truth about the history of all of them and the truth about what the government did and what it was trying to do and what sort of influence it was trying to have. If we get there, we will have informed consent. But if we don't get there, if we're sitting there saying, let's try it again, I'm sorry. To me, it's completely unethical. until we get to the bottom of what happened and who did it and how it was designed and what the purpose of all this stuff was, we shouldn't be trying to move forward with you know, psychedelic drugs, and particularly drugs like the business with Strassman, where he's getting government funding. Matt, I would just say that on its surface is just a really bad idea. So let's stop, pause, and spend a little bit of time getting an understanding of what happened to us, and then we'll know how we can move forward.
You make a really strong point, and I love your point about informed consent. You know, the other angle I always come at these things from, and it's the spiritual perspective, because that's what the show Skeptico is about. It's about following the data, being able to accept wherever that data leads you. And then it's also about looking for the deeper conspiracy, because if you don't, if you think the data alone is telling you the story, you're liable to be bamboozled. But the third component for me is to look for the deeper spirituality, because I think there is, the evidence has led me to believe there is a larger truth at hand that is beyond these people who are playing these games, these horrific games, these very sick and evil games. I think there's a larger truth beyond that. Maybe some people agree or disagree, but bringing it all the way back full circle, I mean, I know you don't like Alan Watts, but I love the quote, and I brought it up at the last show. When you get the message, hang up the phone. So anyone who's interested in being a psychonaut, my point is, you really don't get the message yet. You don't get the message about what being a better person is, about loving everyone, about the first rules of every wisdom tradition, tell the truth. Hey, that's the hard part. The hard part isn't going on some expanded consciousness adventure. The hard part is coming back and living your life in a way that is congruent with these values that we all resonate with and say that's really how we're supposed to live our life. So I never bring that up on this show, but since you so strongly made the case against psychedelics and against entheogens, I'm not going to make that same case, because I think people can find space in there that probably makes sense inside of some greater spirituality, but I would share your extreme caution and ask, why is that really necessary? What do you really hope to accomplish by that if you truly are looking for this deep spirituality?
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing against psychedelic drugs for spiritual exploration, in general, nothing whatsoever. I really just want to focus right now on how they've been used, who used them, what was the purpose of bringing them into our culture. And, you know, as I said, I just want to have informed consent going forward. With Strassman, you know, if he was here, I would just say, stop what you're doing. Take your energies and help try to determine what really was in back of the like Gordon Wasson and Tim Leary and Sidney Cohen. Let's get to the truth about this. Just remember this. When they asked for the document, Helms just laughed at him and destroyed him. He wasn't even fired, right? And this was when the Church Commission asked for the documents, they had fatalities. Citizens that had been given LSD without their knowledge who had died, right? These were the conditions that the Congress was demanding the documents.
And by the way, the only reason this stuff comes out is because they're also doing it up in Canada, and they have different freedom of information laws, and they were able to take them to court in Canada. They were able to keep the seal on it in the U.S.
Exactly. So anyway, I just want to get the full disclosure before we go forward, because I am worried that they're going to try to do it again. And I think we need to be nervous about that, because they didn't get caught the first time. You see, they didn't really get caught. There became awareness, and then they simply told us that they weren't going to use these kinds of techniques anymore. But you can just see from the example I gave about SRI that they could care less about, you know, the democratically controlled components of democracy, right? They think those are just a joke. They can circumvent those anytime they want. The deep state oligarchic control is what has the power. And so when we look at Strassman, I think we have to have a question mark and go, hey, is this guy, part of that? And we don't know until we get more information. And Strassman, if he is, an ethical individual, I think he would look at this data and go, they're right. And I'm not going to go forward. I'm going to stop. And we're going to really try to get to the bottom of all this, because I can see that it's easy to look at me as possibly a reiteration of what was done in the 50s and 60s.
Joe, for folks who are interested in pursuing this further in terms of your thoughts on it, where would you direct them? Are you going to write a book on this? You really should. You've compiled.
Yeah, I actually have. It'll be coming out soon. It's called The Secret Language of the Oligarchs. And, I don't know, it's maybe 60 days away. You'll get the first copy. And basically, it does literary deconstruction of Brave New World, Huxley's book. And then it shows that this isn't a fiction or a warning, but rather this is a plan that's being implemented. And I show that one thing the oligarchs do, fortunately, is they have a kind of sense of humor. They have a literary genre that they communicate with. And I give examples of modern writers who are using this this literary genre. And I just try to give people what I think are useful informations to, have a more effective democracy.
It's going to be really interesting to see how that book is received among your audience, because I just get the sense that a lot of the folks who have been with you and stayed with you might find a little bit of upset with that kind of thing. But we'll see. It's being interesting.
Well, if I don't, then, I haven't done my job. I mean, this is really where, I just try to understand my world and write about, forces and, things which are hidden sometimes, sometimes not, but that I think are valuable to people. I mean, really, all I really want to do, Alex, is try to help have a more effective democracy. I mean, the oligarchs, you talked about sort of the reasons that, they would want to have power. And some of these can be seen as actually, inevitable or even beneficial. But I just see democracy now as very, very ineffective. We're lied to. We're given, candidates that are controlled by secret societies. And so our democracy just isn't effective. And I think that when you do your job and I do mine, that democracy benefits, that you have a more informed citizenry, more skeptical, more able to ask the right questions, and then hope to heaven that we start getting better candidates as a result of it.
Our guest again has been Joseph Atwell. I just understood that he's coming up with a new book, Secret Language of the Oligarchs. Can't wait to see that. But we've been mainly talking about a lot of the work that they'll find at your website, right? Postflaviana.org. I'll link that up in the show notes. Joe, it's been great, as always, having you on.
Thank you, Alex. Talk to you soon, I hope.
Thanks again to Joseph Atwell for joining me today on Skeptico. One question I'd have to tee up from this interview: how much should we be concerned about the government's past, present, and future interest in manipulating consciousness through psychedelics? So as you heard, Joe and I squared off on some of these issues, and I disagree with some of his points. But again, in typical kind of Joe Atwell style, I think he's revealed something extremely important that overshadows any minor disagreements I might have with him. And that is, what the hell is the deep state doing trying to manipulate consciousness with drugs? So I asked the question, but I kind of tip my hand in terms of where I'm leaning. Love to hear your input, your thought, your challenge to anything that came up for you in this interview. Of course, the place to do it is through the Skeptico website, Skeptiko. You can download any of the 350 previous shows. You know, I wrote a book a while back. I never mentioned the book. I probably should. My publisher would appreciate if I did. He'd appreciate if you buy the book, Why Science is Wrong About Almost Anything. I have to do a better job of mentioning that, and I will probably even put it on the website. Wow, what an idea there. Anyways, go to the website. You can also check out the Skeptico Forum. Connect with me there. Connect with me Facebook or any way you might choose. Have a couple interesting shows coming up. Stay with me for all of that. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.